So good morning, everyone. My name's Steve Woodward, and I'm a principal evangelist of Microsoft. And I work in the team that have brought you some fairly impressive video deliveries over the last couple of years. So our group basically work on delivering some fairly high-scale internet-based or web-based video delivery projects. I've actually run Sunday Night Football for the last 2 years with NBC. Also been involved in things like March Madness. Our team did the Vancouver Olympics for NBC. And through all of those projects, we've learned a lot about what it actually takes to run live events and to stream large quantities of video onto the internet. We also figured out what most of the challenges are. And what we're going to be talking about today is really just, I'll give you a quick overview of the technologies that we use in order to stream this video content. Look at the architecture in terms of what it takes from an end-to-end delivery perspective. And then one of my colleagues, Alex, actually did a presentation yesterday about this new platform that we've announced this week called the Microsoft Media Platform, which is basically just an umbrella over all of our Microsoft media technologies. In order to give them all the same naming so it makes it easier to find and reference all of that content. And then I'll dive into the meat of the presentation today, which is this new thing that we've just announced as well called the Microsoft Media Platform Content Manager, which kind of is a little lengthy, so we're just going to call it Content Manager for today. So let's go ahead and get started. So any of you familiar with smooth streaming? Do you use it today? Okay, a few hands going up. Okay, for the rest of you, let's give a quick explanation of what smooth streaming is. So traditionally, when we stream video, we do progressive download, which means you start the video and the user has to select a specific bit rate. So you give them the option of 750 or 1.5 meg. They then start downloading that video. And somewhere along the line, the network changes. They've not got as much bandwidth as they did before. Maybe they go and run up some other applications. And at that point, the video starts to buffer and stutter, and it's really not that good an experience. So smooth streaming is our implementation of an HTTP adaptive streaming protocol. And what it enables us to do is to take a video feed, to encode that feed at multiple different bit rates, chunk the video into 2-second blocks, and then deliver those over HTTP. So as the video comes down, the client, the player running on the client is actually making decisions every 2 seconds about which bit rate it wants to look at. So basically, we break the video down into multiple bit rates. And in the typical project, the ones we work on, we'll run everything from 350 kilobits per second up to about 3.5 meg. And on the 3.5 meg level, we're looking at a full 720p, 30 frames a second video stream. And what happens is that the client can actually make decisions about which of these bit rates it's gonna run. And typically what the client does is it'll go ahead and start at the lowest bit rate, and it'll download that chunk. And in the process of downloading it, it's actually monitoring how long it took to download it. And once it's actually downloaded it and it starts playing that video chunk, it'll actually make assessments of how much CPU load is being given, whether or not it's dropping any frames trying to play back that chunk. Now, assuming everything's okay, and this is the lowest bit rate, and pretty much every machine out there can distribute, can play this content back, then the network's looking good. I'm actually going to jump up to one of the higher bit rates. At that point, it's going to go ahead and download that chunk, play that chunk back, and again, it's making assessments as to whether or not I'm dropping any frames, whether or not I'm overloading the CPU on the machine. That one downloaded fine, in well under 2 seconds. So at that point, I can actually jump up to the 2.4 meg rate. And at that point, I can actually stream very, very high quality down to the user. Now, assuming the network stays at that level, I can continue to play back 2.4 meg. If I run into any problems with the network, and maybe that one of those chunks takes a little longer to download than I would like, then I can actually drop down to one of the lower bit rates. But because all of those 2 second chunks are picture aligned, when I play back, it doesn't matter. When I switch between the chunks, the video just plays smoothly. Hence why it's called smooth streaming. Okay. The other nice thing about the fact that this is all coming down as HTTP traffic is all of that, they're just chunks of HTTP files that come down. So they get cached everywhere in the network that you have a normal HTTP cache. So if you've got four or five of you in the same building and you're all watching the same video, all of those chunks are just being cached, and you know, you're actually only accessing them locally rather than pulling all that content down across the internet. So it's a very, very efficient way for us to do, you know, the really large scale projects that we work on. You know, typically we're looking at, you know, hundreds of thousands of concurrent users. And all we're doing is distributing these 2-second chunks through a CDN, and that content is then all just being pulled down by the end users. So in terms of what the architecture looks like on these big projects, typically we'll have, you know, a bunch of cameras. So for Sunday Night Football, we actually run 5 simultaneous video feeds. They get pushed through an encoder. And for most of the big projects we use, we actually use dedicated broadcast-grade encoders. So, you know, they fail over. You know, if one of them goes down, we can actually move the content to another one. And, you know, they're dedicated hardware devices that are doing that. You know, we're typically looking at, you know, so we've got 5 video cameras. Each of those is doing either 5 or 6 different bit rates. We use 5 bit rates for standard def, 6 bit rates for HD, which takes us all the way up to that 3.5 meg. And then all of that video content, all those feeds are being taken in, and they're being chunked up into those 2-second blocks. And then they're being pushed off to an ingest server. Now, ingest server is just an IIS server running IIS media services. And it's the IIS media services that understand when it gets these 2-second chunks that it can take those and drop them into a fragmented MP4 file, and then it knows how to serve that content back out. The reason that we run, you know, both, you can see there's both primary and secondary origin and a primary and second ingest there, is so that we end up with failover redundancy in case anything goes wrong. So we'll actually push the content across to an ingest server. All those video chunks are flowing there. And then the ingest server will actually push that to 2 separate origins, and they're in hot standby. So if one of them goes down, we automatically just fail over to the second one. Then all of that content is basically pulled through the network, gets pulled out through a CDN. And, you know, as we said, those video clients on the far end are just pulling that video content down. Every 2 seconds, they're going and getting another chunk of audio and video. So pulling down those every 2 seconds. So that's basically how smooth streaming works and you know, roughly how the architecture works. Now, once we've got something set up like this, one of the challenges, you know, when we first got this stuff up and running, and if any of you have played with smooth streaming, you'll appreciate the pain of this. When you actually go and create a new instance of a project and you want to go and you know, run it, you have to create what's called a publishing point on all of the ingest servers and all of the origins. And basically, that's just a definition of an endpoint that the encoders are going to push to. So there's a lot of like manual steps that had to go on in order to do that. When we first started Sunday Night Football over two years ago, we would actually manually go and do all of that work. So we'd go in to all of the ingest servers and the origins, and we'd configure all of that stuff by hand. And then when it came time to actually go run an event, again, it was a very manual process. We'd actually have to go in, and we'd physically go tell all the encoders to start. The encoders would start. We then have to make sure that everything was running on the origins and make sure that the video was flowing through correctly. And then, you know, we'd run up a client and everything was running. But it was a very manual process. When we stopped everything down, we had to do the reverse. We had to go and, you know, stop the encoders by hand. We had to go and stop the publishing points by hand. And then we had to move the content from that live event off to, you know, a VOD origin. So we basically just push that content across to another origin in order to just serve that out as on-demand content after the events have happened. So through all of that, you know, experience over the last couple of years, we have a couple of partners who've actually gone through the process of automating all of that workflow in order to be able to manage, you know, the end-to-end, you know, managing the encoders and the origins and, you know, working that stuff out. But we figured that, you know, it was great that they've gone ahead and done that, but it really doesn't help everyone else adopt technologies. So if you were trying to look at, you know, building this thing yourself, and you then realized that in order to be able to manage this, you were going to have to go and manually turn all these devices on and off and, you know, set everything up, it's actually a lot of work. So about a year ago, we decided that we were going to go ahead and try and build a system that would actually manage this end-to-end process for both on-demand and VOD content. On-demand and live content. And that's the content manager that we've gone ahead and built. So the Microsoft Media Platform, these basically make up all of the components. And if you go watch Alex's session, I'm sure the on-demand of that will be available probably today. Basically, at the top, we have services. And you know, the IIS media services basically sit on top of IIS 7. And that's what allows us to stream all the video content. We're also looking at doing some work with Azure. They've actually announced that they can actually provide origin services themselves for on-demand content. And then if we drop down below that, Expression Encoder is our encoder. And what I'm going to be showing you today is actually using Expression Encoder in two different places, and I'll explain those while I go through. But basically, you know, we can actually do live encoding with it, and we can do on-demand encoding with it. And that's what we use it for within Content Manager. Microsoft Play Ready is obviously our DRM functionality. We haven't integrated any of that yet into Content Manager. It's something that we're definitely going to look at in the future. And then dropping down to the clients, obviously Silverlight has been our primary focus for the last couple of years in terms of delivering video through. And everything that we've built so far here is mainly focused around smooth streaming. So we can also we can output MP4 files. So you know, potentially we could also use the same system in order to develop content that we could then push out to HTML5. On the smooth streaming client kit, so there's a porting kit rather that's been developed and works with iOS, Android, and Linux. And the way that we're actually using or streaming stuff to those right now, so the way what we've developed so far actually will push out to an iOS platform. But it does that using a feature of IIS Media Services, which will actually take H.264-based smooth streaming, and it will transcode that on the fly and push it out as HLS. So we've already built that into Content Manager. And at the bottom, the frameworks, Video Editor, which I'm going to show you shortly, is what used to be called the Rufka Editor, if you've ever seen that. Content Manager, which is what the bulk of the conversation is here today. The Microsoft Media Platform Player Framework is the video player. So it's a Silverlight-based video player that understands how to do smooth streaming. It also has a bunch of other functionality built in to do things like analytics and ad insertion and laying out timeline markers. So if any of you have watched the Sunday Night Football stuff, we actually lay out time markers along the bottom of the timeline that show you where all the major plays were in the game. And that stuff's just being done by the framework. And then finally, Audience Insight, which is a new framework that we're announcing this week as well, that allows us to do a whole bunch of analytics during a live event to actually monitor what the end user experience is like. So we can see whether or not users are, you know, they're buffering the video, what bit rate they're actually managing to pull down, whether or not they're playing with the DVR controls. We used it fairly extensively through PDC, which is our professional developers conference that we actually streamed live. And one of the things we were doing there was actually looking at, we did multiple language translations in real time. So we could actually go down with Audience Insight and actually see what languages people were pulling the content down in different geos. So it's a very, very powerful mechanism. I think Eric Smith, my boss, has a presentation on that later today. Okay, so Content Manager. So as I said, when we were looking at these big projects, managing that whole end-to-end workflow was very, very challenging. So what we've done is we've built this thing we call Content Manager that allows us to go ahead and manage like the entire life cycle of the video content of a video project. So first off, it allows you to define stuff at project level. So you know, for us, the work we do with NBC, a project could be Wimbledon, or it could be the US Open, or it could be Sunday Night Football. Within the company, we're actually looking at using this functionality as well. So it could be that a project is, you know, a series of brown bags that need to happen, or it could be an exec keynote that we want to broadcast, or it could be a, you know, essentially like this event. You know, so the stuff that we're doing here, where we want to broadcast some of this content, we want to capture some of this content for on-demand viewing later. So for a particular project, you can actually specify what the target platforms are. So as I said, typically we do smooth streaming, and we go up to 720p. But we can also specify that at the same time I'm doing that streaming, I also want to rebroadcast this event, transcode it to HLS. And when I set those features up at the project level, that information actually just carries all the way through to both the on-demand encoding and the live broadcast. So it'll automatically configure all the endpoints in order to be able to do that. For video on demand, we actually took the approach that what we want to be able to do was seamlessly transcode video or encode video that comes to us in one format, convert it to smooth streaming, and then import it into Content Manager. And to do that, we use a feature of IIS Media Services called Transformation Manager. And Transformation Manager actually allows you to set up a batch process, if you like, of tasks that you want to perform on a particular asset. And then it will associate those tasks with a drop folder. And when we drop the asset in there, it automatically gets transcoded and pulled across. Live event broadcasting, obviously the thing that we were our main focus in terms of actually trying to solve that problem for everybody, make it easy to do. Video editing using Rough Cut Editor. So we actually, during Sunday Night Football games, we actually create what we call rough cut edits during the course of the game. So there's a touchdown. We'll actually go and splice an in point and out point on the live video, and we'll publish that as a highlight clip. We're not actually publishing a new asset as such, so we're not doing any encoding. All we're doing is marking an in point and out point in the existing smooth streaming manifest that's there, and then publishing that out as a new asset. Ad insertion. This is my customer, NBC. This is their favorite part, because this is how they make money. Obviously with a sporting event, you have no idea where the ads need to go, because it depends what's going on in the game. There's certain points in the game where you know roughly where the ads are going to go, like in the middle of the quarters or a halftime and those kind of things. But most of the time, you have no idea where they're going to go. And if you have an injury timeout, you have to throw in an ad. So we, over the last couple of years, have developed a system for doing mid-roll ad insertion. And what we do is, if you go back and look at that smooth streaming idea that we had, so you know, every 2 seconds we're throwing chunks of video into this smooth streaming manifest, we can also add a data track in there. And we add in two data tracks, predominantly for Sunday Night Football. One is all the play-by-play data, so you can see where the major events happened. And then we lay those out in the timeline so that you can actually scrub back and see, you know, where the touchdowns and field goals were. And then the other track we insert is an ad insertion track. So it's just another data track. And every time we have an ad opportunity, we'll insert a chunk into the smooth streaming manifest that says, play an ad here, and here's the information about those ads that you need to go play. And what will happen is when the player gets to that point in the video, it'll see that, and it will switch from the live broadcast to pull down on-demand content, which is actually the video ads. Goes and plays the ads. When it comes back, it drops back to live and carries on. So we've actually built that into the system as well so that we can do ad insertion. And then because this is all based on SharePoint, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that we throw in, things like related content, speaker bios, just trying to think of anything else that was in there. So when we do things like this event, you know, we actually want to publish the PowerPoint presentations that go along with the content. We might want to be able to link between all the sessions. So again, all of that stuff's just built into Content Manager. Okay, so project-based. So basically at project level, you go and define a new project. And when you define the project, all we're doing is creating a new site within SharePoint. And for that site, you can actually go in and specify things like who the project owners are, what the project profiles are, encoding resources, the IIS media services, FTP servers, and video assets. So the project owners, you can actually say, okay, I've got different people within the organization, and I want to assign them different roles. It could be that they are the person who actually runs the whole content manager system, in which case they're kind of like super user and they get to do everything. But it could be that I have someone who's in charge of just a single project, and I want to be able to give them the ability to go and add assets to the project, approve assets, and you know, actually publish the assets out publicly. So you know, when I go through, I create a new video asset, someone's then got to go and QA it, make sure it's okay, before it then gets published so that everyone else, all the end users, can see it. And then we have end users, and they can't actually see any of the back-end stuff, but they can have a gallery view, so they can actually just see all of the video content that exists within the system, and then they can view all of that content. Now, in terms of encoding resources, you can actually specify a number of encoders that are going to be used for live broadcast. If you're not doing any live broadcasting, you don't need to configure those and set them up. The IIS Media Origins. So if you've looked at SharePoint's video capabilities today, when you put video inside of SharePoint, it'll actually put it inside the SharePoint database. And then the only capabilities it has is the ability to do progressive download. So you've actually, you know, bulked out the SQL database with, you know, more content. And in most cases, our video assets are really big. So typically, we run about 6 gig an hour on one of our live broadcasts because we've got multiple video streams in there. So you can imagine these things get pretty unwieldy pretty quickly. So we made the decision that we weren't actually going to embed any of the video content inside of SharePoint. All we're going to do is reference it. So the only thing we store is metadata associated with video assets, so we know the URL of the asset. But the assets are all just stored off an IIS media server, which is actually going to serve all that content out. Or those media servers are actually providing the publishing points that we use for live events. FTP servers. So typically with these big events that we run, we'll actually push content out to an origin, and then that gets picked up by the CDN and moved out. Now, oftentimes, those servers aren't in the same place as where the rest of the management piece is being worked on. So we actually just push everything over FTP off to those servers. So if we've got additional assets that we want to be able to push out, you know, like PowerPoint presentations or, you know, information about what video assets are available, we'll push that over to the video server. And then finally, all the video assets themselves. Okay. Whoops. They jumped. Okay. Let's go and take a look at it. My machine went to sleep. Okay, there it is. Okay. So as I said, this is all based on top of SharePoint. So it's all based on top of SharePoint 2010. And what we've done here is we've actually gone ahead and just set up two projects. And if we go and look at those, there's a sample project, which is the one I'm going to do most of the demos off of. And then the other one is a sample conference project. Let's go and take a quick look at that one first. So we go and look at this. And you can see down the left-hand side, there's a whole bunch of, you know, there's an asset gallery. I can go and manage assets. I can manage approval. So this is all to do with the publishing process. When I want to actually take a new asset before I actually publish it for everybody to be able to see it, I need to be able to go and manage those. There's a live dashboard that allows us to manage live events, ad insertion tool, metadata export. And then there's a list of assets. There we go. So, and if you look down here, if any of you guys have watched any of the content from PDC, you can actually see that these are just video assets from PDC. And we actually use this system to manage all of the live and on-demand broadcasts that happen with PDC. So we go in, I just pull up one of the video assets. You can see the smooth streaming started, the clock's ticking. Wait, there's no timeline. And that video asset is living somewhere out on the web. So this is it's the same content that we use for PDC. It's out there. Even though my system's running here, my origin is somewhere completely different. It's the CDN-backed origins that we actually use for PDC. And all that content is up there. If we go look at this, and we also scroll down to the rest of the bottom, you can see that there's a whole bunch of additional data that we actually store about the video assets themselves. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of additional things when you push that content out that you want people to know about. You know, you want to know, you want to make it searchable, so you need to be able to provide, you know, what all the keywords associated with this video content. Maybe you want to say who the publisher was, who actually delivered the session, so the speaker name. You know, whether or not there's things like bit.ly URLs or, you know, short URLs that you want to push out that information as well. So all of that information is actually just stored within the asset list, and then we have the ability to take all of that content and export it as an XML document, and it's that XML document that gets pulled in by a standalone video player that's running as part of the website for this project. So for Sunday Night Football, we have a standalone pop-up player that comes up, and what we do is we pass it this XML document, and the document tells it, okay, here's all the video assets, you know, and for the PDC, they were like, here's all the sessions, and here's all the information about the sessions, and also what the status of those are. So if they're live events, we can actually tell it that it's a live event, but it's not currently live. You know, it's coming soon. And then when we actually take those events live, what we do is we update that XML document when we push it out, and the player can then see that this asset's now live and playing, and it can give the user an opportunity to click on that and watch that content. So all of that's just pushed out as an XML document that gets pulled up by a separate player to this. Okay. Let's jump back over here. Okay. So for creating the on-demand content, and when we did this for PDC, we had about 35 sessions, I think, that were live sessions, and we had about another 35 sessions that were recorded ahead of time. And we then, you know, needed to take all those on-demand sessions that were recorded. We got handed a whole bunch of AVI files, and we needed to convert those into smooth streaming assets so that we could actually publish those in exactly the same format as we were going to do for the live events. So we use Transformation Manager, and as I said, what Transform Manager does, it actually monitors a watch folder. And that watch folder, you know, I'm showing you just a second, is just a standard share, but it could just as easily be an FTP share. So it could be for, you know, doing a broadcast like Sunday Night Football, where we actually get video assets sent to us, which are things like ads, or they create, you know, highlight clips during the course of the game. Some of those aren't done with Rough Cut Editor. That they can just drop those or FTP those into a drop folder. And we can automatically, as soon as they arrive, convert those into smooth streaming assets and then populate the information into Content Manager. So let's go ahead and look at that. So at the top here, all I've got is the drop folder. And all I'm going to do is just grab one of these assets. And it's just a WMV. It's actually a Bing commercial. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to drop that into the watch folder. And as soon as I drop it into the watch folder, Transformation Manager is actually going to kick up and realize that there's a new asset there. And if we go in here, so we can see that it's actually just pulled that asset in automatically, and it's now in the process of actually encoding it. So it's going to sit there in the background. It's going to run through the encoding process. It's going to create a smooth streaming asset. Now, if I'd set this project up to say, you know, I want both smooth streaming and I also want the ability to stream to, you know, an iPhone or a Windows Phone 7, I could actually make Transformation Manager actually go through multiple steps and create different versions of this video asset that I can then stream to different devices. In this case, it's just going to go through and encode that asset. Once it's encoded it, as I said, Transformation Manager allows us to set up this pipeline of tasks that we want to do. Once it's encoded, it's then going to move the asset off to an IIS Media Services origin. And once it's done that, it's actually going to create an XML document and import that document into Content Manager so that that asset then appears as a new asset within Content Manager. So we jump back over. It's going to take a little while to run through. If we jump back over to SharePoint, screen resolution's not helping me any here. There we go. If we jump into my sample project and look at the assets in here, you can see that I've got a couple of pieces that I've already thrown in here. And all we did with these is the top two are actually they're actually referenced out on the Smooth Streaming, one of the Smooth Streaming HD website. So those are the only thing I'm storing there is the metadata associated with those, and I'm referencing out to the publicly available smooth streaming versions of those two videos. And then at the bottom, I have two other ads, which I went through the process of just dropping into that watch folder, and they automatically get populated. So we create a thumbnail. That thumbnail then gets populated in, so I can actually see what those assets look like. And if I go ahead and just click on one of these, you can see it'll just go ahead and play it. So this is actually the Player Framework, I guess, the new Microsoft Media Platform Player Framework. And all we've done is turned that into a web part that we can now embed inside a SharePoint page. So it's going to go ahead and play the video, and it will probably just loop back and do it again. The other interesting thing is you can see the video is fairly fuzzy when it starts. That's to do with the fact that the startup, you know, it starts off with that 300 kilobits per second, and then as soon as it realizes it's got enough bandwidth and enough CPU, it'll actually jump up to one of the higher bit rates, and then the video quality crisps up. That's typically, if you look at content on the internet, that's how you can tell that it is smooth streaming. Okay. Okay, so for live events, we wanted to be able to create a live event. So it's a new event. We're going to do a broadcast. Maybe it's my session today. I want to be able to create that as a new video asset before the event actually starts. And then I'm going to go and edit all the metadata associated with that. So I can say, you know, here's what the title of the event is. Here's who the speaker is. Here's any additional information I want to go along with that when it gets published. I then go through an approval process. So in most companies, I'm sure if you're going to do a live broadcast, there are encoding resources associated with that. So someone needs to manage those and actually approve that, you know, when you want to run a particular event at a particular time, that those resources are available. We then have this thing called the Live Event Manager that allows us to go through the process of actually starting and stopping the event. And then we can monitor the broadcast. And once it's finished, we'll automatically take that video asset and turn it to an on-demand asset. Let's go ahead and look at that. So as I said, if I go into my list of assets here, the other one hasn't yet appeared. It'll probably appear shortly. So I'm going to go and create a new asset. So I'm going to say this is a new live asset. If it's a file asset, it's an on-demand content. So I can either manually go and create on-demand content or a new entry for on-demand content, or I can go the route of actually just dropping it to Transform Manager and it will create that content, populate the information into SharePoint for me. So if I go create a new live asset, I'm just going to give it a title. So let's call this Med03. Go down here, estimated time, 60 minutes. And scroll down, we're going to do today. And we're going to do it at noon. Okay. So you can see when I go create an event, there's a whole bunch of additional things I could put in there. So I could put in, you know, a long description of what it is, you know, who the content author is, that would be me. If I want to do a short URL to it so that it's easier to get to that content, I can do that. I can categorize it. So within the system, we can actually categorize that, you know, these are ads, these are you know, movies, these are presentations, these are highlights, these are player bios for something like Wimbledon. So we can actually search all that content. We can also individually publish an XML document that covers everything for a particular category. So if you've got a list of highlights and you just want to push those out, then we can distribute that stuff. The other thing I need to tell it is which encoders I want to use. So if I've got multiple encoders that I could potentially use, we basically broke those just by group ID, and in this case, mine are 1, 2, and 3. And I'm just going to reference which encoder I actually want the system to use when it's going to go ahead and do its live event. The other thing I'm going to do right now, just to make my life easier later on, is, and I'll explain this a little later on, but basically I can assign a series of ads that I want associated with this event as well. So I've just got one ad pod that I want to run, and I'm just going to go and assign that one now just so it's there and configured when the event goes live. Okay. So we go ahead and save this, and if you can see down in the bottom right-hand corner, it says that this event's now pending. So until someone goes and approves it, this event is not going to get published live, and I can't really do anything with it. So at that point, I'm just going to go click on it, run up to the top, go through the approval process. And all we're doing for the approval process is we're just using the standard built-in functionalities within SharePoint to run human interaction workflows. So we just have a workflow where I can actually assign who can approve these. It just so happens that since I'm a super user on the system, I can approve them. But I could potentially just go in, I can say, okay, for this set of assets, I want Joe to approve all the assets. So every time I want approval, I run the approval process, it's actually going to go and send requests to him. He has to go in and approve it, say, yeah, I've checked this, you know, everything looks right, it's using the right encoders, we're good to go. So now if we go down here, we can see it's approved. And if we go up to a live dashboard, hopefully we have an event there. We do. Okay. So this is the live dashboard, and this is just a set of Silverlight controls that we've built that plug into SharePoint. And basically at the top, across the top, I get one track per encoder group that I've got. So if I've got multiple encoder groups, I'd actually see that there's, you know, three or four encoder groups there. So for, you know, an event like this where we've got multiple sessions running concurrently and we've got, you know, encoders, multiple encoders and multiple video feeds coming in, I'd actually see one for each group. So when we did PCC, we had four simultaneous sessions going on at the same time. And we could actually go into this tool and actually see that we had, you know, four encoders set up. We could see all the sessions, so that where it says no ID right now is my session. So we could actually see, you know, that we had a keynote from 9 until 10, and then from 10 till 11 we had four separate breakouts. And those are basically just the references to that live asset laid out on a calendar so that we can see what events we're actually working on today. So if I go ahead and click on this, it'll automatically just pull all that information down into the lower section. And in the lower section, I have a preview window that allows me to see, you know, when a live event's actually running. And I can also control the event from here. So as you can see on the left-hand side, this is what allows me to control the event. The start button. When I push the start button, a number of things are going to happen. First off, we're going to reach out to an IIS media server, and we've developed a new set of web service APIs in order to be able to control publishing points. So we can create publishing points, we can list publishing points, we can delete publishing points, we can start and stop publishing points. So when I hit start, it's going to reach out, it's going to create a publishing point for this event. Once the publishing point's been created, it's then going to make a web service call through to an encoder. And again, we've developed a set of web services there so that we can talk to expression encoder. And we've also developed another set of web services that allow us to talk to the inlet encoders. Now, for those of you who don't know, because you're all over here this week, there's another event going on over the convention center called the National Association of Broadcasters. So all the encoding vendors over there, I've had a bunch of meetings with those guys this week. They're pretty interested in what we're doing. Those guys would really like us to be able to, you know, to hook in with this and, you know, for us to be able to manage the start and stops of their encoders as well. So I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of follow-on conversations when I get back to the office to try and fix up the rest of that stuff. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and start the camera. And I apologize for the video quality, because it's not a very good little camera, but it at least gives you the idea of what's going on. Okay, let's go ahead and click start. So what it's doing now, you can see the status over on the right-hand side. It's actually going to go through the process of actually starting up the encoders. So it's starting the encoder groups. If I go ahead and click watch, it should, if my camera's working, give it a little while. Okay, so it's just gone to on air. There we go. So hopefully, any second now, we should get video. I mean, no video. Camera's running. Huh. Yeah, I don't need to click on air. Okay, why is it not running? Okay, for some reason we have no video coming through. I have no idea what's happening then. Okay. Should be plugged into the right cable. It's a temperamental little camera.
Seems like it's playing
something. Yeah, it thinks it's playing, but it's getting black screen. I don't know. Okay. Sorry, guys. No live video. There we go. Right. Okay. And now it's just switched itself off. I hate this thing. I swear before I do this demo again, I'm buying a new camera. Okay. So you get the idea. It's playing video. So it's a good job I don't do this stuff professionally, isn't it? So basically, we have two states. When I hit start, what it's done is it's gone and, as I said, created the publishing points, started the encoders, and as you can see, video is kind of flowing. Not quite as well as I would have liked, but it's flowing. So typically when we're running events, we actually get to the point where, you know, we're all ready. Broadcast is ready, everything's ready, but the event isn't really on air. So typically for like an event like this where we'd be broadcasting, you know, my presentation live, about 15, 20 minutes before the broadcast starts, we will actually start everything. We're not ready to go live yet. So I don't want a player which is sat out on the internet which is going to reference back into the thing to see me standing up here picking my nose or putting my mic on and do stuff. So we haven't actually published this yet. So no, if anyone was watching, trying to watch this video stream out on this separate player, we haven't published it yet. So what happens is when I click on air, I'm ready to roll. And at that point, what it's going to do is it's going to update that XML document that the player is actually consuming and say, this event that I told you about earlier, it's now live and on air. So if you guys had watched any of the broadcasts with PDC, you'd be in the player, you could see the schedule, and then all of a sudden you'd see a play button appear on one of the session events. And when all that was us updating this event, so it's now on air, it's live, you can go watch it. So that event is now running and live. Okay. So video editing. This thing we now call the video editor. Was called Rufka Editor for the longest time. So basically it's a Silverlight instantiation that allows us to pull all the video assets from a particular event or from a CMS system, throw those all into a media bin, and then edit those in a fairly crude way. So there's no nice transitions between the video. But it does allow us to go in and say, you know, for a live event, I want to create a highlight clip right now. And actually publish that as a separate asset that can be then consumed by a player. So let's go ahead and take a look at that. So if I jump back over to my asset gallery, and I'm going to go ahead and create a new item. And I'm going to create a new rough cut asset. Now, the reason we need to do this first is that when we create an asset, the rough cut editor requires that you pass it like unique identifier for that asset when it's going to get created. So we create the asset first, then we go into the rough cut editor, and it will actually create a composite manifest. And I think that's the only thing it needs is a name. So, you know, same as the other assets, I could go in and fill in all the rest of the information and you know, go through the creating all of that. So if we get down here, again, I've got to go through 14 screen resolution means I need to scroll up, go ahead and approve that asset. And now when I go and click on that asset, actually go back. Just off the bottom. There it is. So I'm going to click on that. And when I click on that, I can then launch the Rough Cut Editor. Which hopefully will just come up shortly. Dun, 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 dun. Oh. Let's try that one more time. The wrong one. Oh, in my scroll up I did. Unfortunately, screen resolution had to be set this way to deal with the projector. Okay, so let's go ahead and launch it. So let's go launch Rough Cut Editor, and what that's going to do is actually pass all of the video assets associated with this project across to the Rough Cut Editor. So I could actually go and take, you know, those two movies I've got, and if I scroll down, the rest of the assets are in there. You can also see my live events there. And I can just drag and drop those down onto the timeline. And I can go mark out points. I can take that live running event and actually just cut a section of it and publish that as a separate asset. And once I do that, I can just save it and it gets dropped back in. There we go. It's not working properly. For some reason, it's not seeing my live event as a proper asset. Let's see. I'll drop that one down there. It's not. Okay. My apologies, guys. That one's not working properly. It's been a while since I played with this. Okay. We're going to bail on that. So the one thing I will say about Rough Cut Editor is there's another session on it. There's a 30-minute session on it that Jason's doing tomorrow. Jason Seuss, one of my peers. And he's actually going to go into this in a lot more detail, show you all the ins and outs, and talks about the new functionality that they're planning. There's a lot of work they're looking at doing and improving Rough Cut Editor for next year's Olympics. So let's go ahead and close that one down. All it's doing is creating manifest files. So, you know, there's some conversation around whether or not we could get the Rough Cut Editor to actually export EDLs. There's no reason why it shouldn't. And then we could use that EDL in order to pass that information across to an encoder that could then take, you know, existing MP4 assets or whatever and actually use that to create a new asset in MP4 format rather than just referencing back into the smooth streaming assets. Okay, ad insertion. As I said, the thing that my customers are most interested in, probably not relevant for most of you, but the ability to do mid-roll ad insertion is pretty important on these big events. That's how they all get monetized. So when I go back into the assets, you'll see that some of my assets are actually categorized already as ads. So we can individually or uniquely identify those as adverts that need to be played. And the way that we set up ads so that they can be played as mid-rolls is we collect them into these groups called ad pods. So it could be that an ad pod is a Subway, a Lexus, and a Verizon ad, and we want those three played together. Now, they'll play in different order somewhere else in the game, so we create multiple ad pods, and those ad pods have the ad assets associated with them. I'll go and show you that in just a second. And the other piece of it is once you've created those ad pods, you have to associate them with a live event, which is what I did when I moved that ad pod across for the live broadcast that was happening. And then finally, we have this utility that allows us to go in and insert the markers into the manifest that tell it that the ad should be played now. So let's go ahead and look at that. So as I said, within my assets here, you can see I've got two assets which are ad assets. And down here, I have another list, which is the ad pods. Right now, I just have one ad pod. And if we go take a look at this, no, not that way. Go back. Okay. If we go take a look at this, we can see that right now this ad pod is defined as having the two connect ads in it. Then the other assets that are there, I could just pull those across, and we could insert those if we wanted to. I'm not quite sure what happened to the one I dropped on Transformation Manager earlier, but that should have appeared by now. And, okay, so once we've created an ad pod, we go into an event, and that's what I did earlier when I created this live event. And if we go take a look at that, we can see down the bottom which ad pods are associated with it. In a typical event, I'd have probably 25 or 30 ad pods associated with this event that I can insert in different places. So for Sunday Night Football, we have ads that specifically go at the beginning and the end of halftime. We have ads which ad pods which we'd use for injury timeouts. So you can imagine the situation, there's gameplay going on the field, and all of a sudden someone gets injured, they bring out the stretcher and the coaches, and they're checking everything out. And then we'll hear on the broadcast line, hey, we're going to take an ad break for a minute and 15. In which case, we run down through our list of ad pods, we'll find a minute and 15, and then we can just go ahead and insert that at that point and play it. So let's go and have a look at the ad insertion tool. And again, you can see at the top we have the same calendar view. So all I need to do to start off with is to go and associate this with the live event that's happening. Of course, my video is still not running, but you can see the videos will be running for 10, 11 minutes. See if my camera will come back on. Maybe we will get some video in just a second. So that video is still running and playing, and so I get to see that within the ad pod tool. And then at the bottom, I have some additional controls. So I can actually go in, and you can see the list of ad pods down on the left-hand side. And those are the ads that I can actually insert into this live event. The one thing I do need to do is to go tell this which encoder to use. So basically, when that live stream gets created, the expression encoder is actually creating that and pushing that content across to a publishing point. Now, for some reason, we actually have to tell it which of the encoders it's actually using, so that when we insert the ad pod, which is just inserting stuff into that publishing point, it gets inserted into the right track. So I'm just going to go ahead and check that. And once that's done, I should be able to go ahead and insert an ad. We go ahead and click on this, and you can see up here it gives me a status that ad pod was inserted, and about 15, 20 seconds after I inserted it, it should actually play. Now you can see there's two players there. The reason being, when we have a standalone player, which is running as part of the delivery that's happening to end users, that player typically has a buffer on it of about 16 seconds. And the player in the right-hand corner is buffered about 16 seconds behind the other one. So the main player, this is actually connecting directly to the publishing point on that origin, which is running locally. And the other player is running 16 seconds behind it. Now, the reason we do that is it takes a while for that marker that I've just inserted to get propagated out to the other player. So we actually run essentially very close to live and then 16 seconds off of live in order to allow that ad marker to get pushed out there. And the ad still hasn't played. We were having problems with this one last night. But we know that the marker was actually inserted. If you want, I can pull up when we finish. I'll pull up the manifest and show you that there was a marker inserted into the bottom of the manifest, and that information should have just been picked up by the player. The other thing I know I can do is if we quickly jump back over to the video assets. I know this was working yesterday. It's not going to play for me either. Gremlins. Okay, that's not going to work either. Okay. So as you can see, that pretty much covers end-to-end everything that we would want to do with the video. There's a whole bunch of features that we're looking at probably improving on this probably in the next 3 to 6 months, like pushing the content up to Azure rather than having it stored on a local IIS origin. And there's some additional work we want to do around the ad insertion piece. So we typically use Dart for all our ad insertion. And all we want to be able to do is round trip that configuration information, populated it into Dart, and then get the requests that come back from Dart so that we can match those two things together. So we're going to go ahead and do those. So in terms of what we built, as I said, all of the content manager system is built on top of SharePoint. And within that, we have the ability to create projects, and those projects have assets associated with them. We built the live dashboard, which is a set of Silverlight controls that allows us to manage live events. The media viewer is just the Microsoft Media Platform video player, and with a few additional pieces around the outside of it in order to make it so that we can have that as a SharePoint web part. We can drop it on the SharePoint page. The ad insertion tool allows us to go ahead and insert those ad markers, and the workflows are used for the approval process. And because they're just standard SharePoint workflows, you can customize those and do anything you want with them. And the ability to publish that content out, just export those XML documents off to that separate Silverlight player, which is published out on the web. Obviously, we use SQL on the back end for all of our database, and we've also built the web service components in order to be able to talk to the other pieces. So we have the fact that we can use Transform Manager and we can push tasks off there. There's some additional tasks that have been created that get dropped into Transform Manager. But you could just as easily go take what we've done, extend that, and do all kinds of wonderful things with it. So we have people right now who are looking at Transform Manager, and they were like, well, if we were going to do transcription service, we could actually take a VOD asset as it arrives, and once we've done the encoding on it, instead of just pushing it straight into the asset management system, we could actually do a transcription service on it, create either closed captioning or populate the rest of the information that comes out of that transcription into SharePoint. The video editor, again, is just integrated in here, and that's another component that's available separately as well. The encoder manager of the web services that allow us to talk to either expression encoder or to the inlet encoders. And the publishing point management, again, is a set of web services that allow us to manage the publishing points on the IIS media services. And for the IIS media services, we're taking advantage of Transform Manager and the publishing points, which are used for live events, and obviously IIS media services itself in order to stream on-demand content. In terms of dependencies, if you're going to go ahead and take this and build on top of it or take advantage of it, we use IIS Media Services 4.0 that was shipped last October. And at the same time they shipped that, they also shipped an alpha version of Transform Manager. Now, right now, I was hoping that we could have shipped all of this content, all of this code, this week. Unfortunately, we're waiting for a new version of Transform Manager. And that beta should be available within the next couple of weeks. So we'll actually push all the code out behind this. It's about 50,000 lines of code. So we're actually going to push all of that code out. People can take that and customize it in any way they want to. Obviously, everything built on top of SharePoint 2010, so you're going to need that. But most of the customers I'm talking to right now, and I'm talking to a bunch of enterprises and a lot of people in the education and higher education space, And they've already got SharePoint. So for them, you know, they want to be able to manage their live events and do that. This is actually a pretty good solution or a pretty good starting point for them in order to be able to create those live events, that live content, and then store it all in SharePoint and make it available for everybody. And as I said, we use Expression Encoder. We actually need 4.0 SP1. There was a fix that went into SP1 to do with the way that our web services call into Expression Encoder and provide that automation for the live events. So hence, we need SP1. So in summary, this is all part of what we're now calling this Microsoft Media Platform. All of the information on that is up on the website. As soon as I get through final approval and we get all this stuff released, we'll put an announcement out on the Media Platform site, so look for it there in the next couple of weeks. So Content Manager is coming very soon, and I'm hoping, you know, maybe even next week. And then the IS Media Services Transfer Manager beta, again, is within the next couple of weeks as well. So hopefully by, where are we now, mid-April. So by the end of April, I'm hoping that both of those pieces should be out. Unfortunately, the Transfer Manager, I don't have any control over. I have to rely on the IS Media Services team to ship that. But the Content Manager should be out within the next couple of weeks. And I think we're done. Questions? So what I would ask is people can come up to the mic. And the only reason is so that we can capture the question. It makes it easier for them to hear it on the recorded track. So come on up.
I have a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Regarding Transform Manager, yes. How does it deal with multiple machines for encoding?
Multiple machines?
Let's say you need to do a lot of encoding, yeah. And you need to have several machines.
Yeah, okay.
Does it cope with that?
So the beta version does. The alpha version that's out there right now just supports a single machine. But the beta version, they've actually integrated with our high-performance computing initiative, and that will actually allow them to cluster multiple transcoding servers under one transfer manager. So the transfer manager can actually take, you know, a number of jobs, and it can actually distribute them across those transform boxes.
Did you have a priority queues planned?
I know that they have stuff like that in the works. I'm not sure whether or not all of that made it into the beta version. I haven't had a chance to look at the beta version yet. I've been too busy catching up with this.
Regarding external encoders, let's say you need to transcode the flash video, and you used to use like FFmpeg.
Yep.
How do you do that? Is that available? I heard something yesterday.
Yeah. So Transform Manager itself is encoder agnostic. So essentially, all it's doing is passing off the information about the profile and you know, what the file name is to a scripted encoding job. In my case, it happens to be going to Expression Encoder. That information could just as easily being pushed to FFmpeg or someone else's encoder. And I know a couple of other encoder vendors who've already gone through the process of actually integrating their stuff with Transform Manager.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, by miss. Jump up.
I had a question about ad insertion.
Yes.
Seeing as the demo didn't really answer the question. What's the come back in point? When you run an ad, does it come back into the live point or where you left off? And can you go, say, if something interesting happens when an ad's running, can you come back into that point but still run your ad out?
Interesting, yeah. Typically when we come back from an ad insert, we'll always go back to the live point. Okay. So, you know, typically if you think during a football game, you know, there's an injury timeout, and they say, okay, we're going to go to a minute and 15. When you come back, we've typically gone back to live play. Because there was an injury timeout, there was nothing that happened in between the two. We don't yet have the ability to, Alex might know this. Can we bail on an ad insert? So can we send an abort so the player would actually drop back out and go straight back to the live stream? Yeah, I know we've talked about it, but I don't think we've actually implemented it yet. So that would be the only way of doing it, would be sending a second signal to say, okay, when you get to the end of the ad, you're on, bail and come
go
out.
Back to the,
rather than, say if I've got three ads in there, I've played the first one, halfway through the second one, something happens and I want to go back to the live event, you'd actually have to tell it to bail at the end of the second one and not play the third one.
Well, that'd be very useful. Do you think that would go on the roadmap?
We can definitely talk to the player guys about it, because it's a player feature, not a feature on our side. We'd have to put some functionality on our side so that you could do the abort, but they'd also have to do some work on the player side so that it could recognize that and bail from the current ad pod that you're in. Okay. So we can definitely talk about it. Sure. So I'll bring that up with them and see whether or not it's a feature we added to the list. Okay, is there any more questions? Yeah.
I'm too interested in the ad insertion, but not for ads.
Okay.
We've been doing a lot of live streaming on from State Farm.
Okay.
We've been putting event metadata in those streams. We built our own tool to pass it to the encoder.
Yeah.
And I think we'd like to do that with the smooth streaming, too, when I see something like this. So I would encourage you to maybe look beyond just ad insertion, but creating our own custom events, being able to send them, maybe pulling them from an XML list,
yeah,
pre-populating so we can just hit a button to send it on. We built a tool like that, and it's been very helpful to us, Essential, actually.
Okay. So. Yeah, we actually had a conversation over dinner last night. I was talking with one of the developers who worked on this for me, and you know, we were looking through other features that we want to put in. And one of them we were looking at was like making that ad insertion tool more generic, so you could actually just insert text at that point in the video. So you could essentially sit there and you could do closed captioning during the course of an event. Or if there was stuff that you wanted to flag up, you could do that.
We also use it for graphics and other things that we pop up in sync. We send
so you just need to send a marker
with those events. And, yeah, okay. A marker or what we call an event.
Okay.
Some temporal metadata. Well,
I mean, the one nice thing is we're giving away all the code, so there's no reason why you can't take what we've done, take that functionality, and then you know, build something to customize it to be able to do that. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to push this out and get the code out to everybody.
One other thing, you didn't mention anything about logging, retrieving of data, about viewership and so on this. Will you cover that later on?
Or? Yeah, I mean, we don't actually do any of that right now as part of Content Manager. The thing that we actually use to monitor like all of the end users is Audience Insight, which allows us in real time to actually see everything that's going on. One of the other features that I know someone is looking at right now is adding some analytics to this so that you can actually capture who watched what video, how long they watched it, so you can get some metrics of usage, for want of a better term. I got time for one more question. I'm already out of time, but by means, jump up.
Any hosted services that a person could just contract to have this all set up and just go in and use?
I haven't spoken to anyone yet. And you know, obviously, this is the first time we're talking about content managers, so I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of questions from like people who would love to host this as a service. We're in the process of trying to get it up and running on Azure ourselves, but we're not going to, just for our own use. But you know, we don't have any plans to actually push it up there and sell it. I mean, we're giving all of the code away, and I'm giving all the binaries away, so people can just take this and use it. If you were to take this and you were to go to a hoster and say, hey, you know, we want you to set up a SharePoint instance and you know, IIS Media Service instance, and we want to deploy this stuff on top of it, it has a fairly sophisticated installer where you can actually go in and say which of the services you want to run on which machines. It'll make deployment packages for those other machines, and you can just go ahead and deploy those services. So from that perspective, it's pretty easy to set up. I certainly don't have any plans right now to go and talk to any of the hosters and get them to run this, but it would be an option.
And if you're looking for a case for the bail on the ads, the rodeo, National Finals Rodeo, and bull riding are two where it's very common that in the middle of the ad something significant would happen. I think they would find value in that ability to jump out of the ad and then jump back in and finish it up later.
Yeah, and I know we definitely looked at it for the Olympics last year and for Sunday Night Football as well. And we decided for most of the time in the events that we deal with, it was an edge case, so it got cut off the bottom of the list, you know, as time and resources ran out. But definitely something we'd be interested in doing in the future. Okay, well, I'm definitely out of time, so thanks everyone for your time. Really appreciate it today.